Welcome to the Bullets and Bourbon Podcast, where it's not about the bourbon, but more about who you share it with.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Bullets and Bourbon, our sixth episode coming at you today. We're going to jump right in, talk a little whiskey. We decided to have a couple little pre-pours, as we've become accustomed to. And I started off with something new to me, but before we talk about that, Dan, what did you throw in your cup?
I went with one of the first bourbons that really got me into bourbon. It's the Old Forester 1920 Prohibition style. Nice pour. Little bit of a kick with 115 proof. So, great pour. I actually paired it. I don't always pair my bourbon with cigar starts.
Most of the time. Lately.
But today, I did pair it with a cigar starts in honor of Julian's birthday.
Happy birthday, Julian.
Happy birthday, Julian. We appreciate everything. And again, you guys make a wonderful product, and it really did pair well with the Old Forester 1920. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you had for the pre-podcast pour?
So the pre-podcast pour of the day actually went to one that I had not had before, and that is not a normal thing for me. This one is called Few Bourbon, spelled F-E-W Bourbon. It falls under the craft theme, as usual, that I've been on for a while. Funny story about this, I've seen this in the store probably, I don't know, damn near 100 times. And, you know, you kind of make fun of me because I'm a little bit of a, what do you call it, label what?
Label whore.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a label whore.
I'm the same way with cigars. Yeah. I see a cigar, if the band isn't nice and flashy, I'm like,
You know. Don't judge a book by its cover is the lesson. And part of that, the other part was I thought that I had this before and didn't like it. And I didn't, I have a book that I write some notes down in on ones I really like, you know, do I have it again? Do I have it on the, you know, neat? Do I have it on the rocks? What do I like about it, et cetera, et cetera. And I did not have that into the book. So saw this today, you know, it was right around 45 bones. So, you know, that's a good gamble in my book.
Oh, 45. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to pass that off.
It also helped that while I was looking at it, a guy kind of walked by and said, hey, if you've never tried that, it's pretty good. So I'm a big believer that you're never going to know everything about whiskey. You're never going to know everything about anything, but especially whiskey. And so it's good to be open-minded and to be a good listener. So I grabbed it, poured it, and I was quite surprised. The nose on it, it was delicious. Just to nose it, cherries, rich caramel. Definitely had the deep wood tones to it. The palate, or mouthfeel, however you want to say that, was big on spice and heavy on the corn. So it really did have those fundamental elements of a good bourbon. And the finish, it might not be my most favorite finish, but it was good. It had an elegant lingering taste to it, some oak to it. It kind of sat on the tongue for a while. The hug was medium. I've become accustomed to a very bold, big hug. That's what I tend to really judge a bourbon by. But I'm going to be honest with you, for a first pour out the gate, checking in at 93 proof, it was a really good sipper. And it paired well. I just took a gamble. I grabbed a Deadwood Tobacco Crazy Alice, a little kind of tinier cigar. Again, I'm not the cigar guy, but it was a great, like, what, 5-minute smoke, 10-minute smoke?
A little bit longer than that. That's one of those flavor cigars, right?
Yeah. I think so. I mean, it paired well. It was good. I will have to say that I do recommend, if you see Few, it's kind of, now that I look at the label, I'm rethinking, it's got a kind of an old school theme to it, but a nice craft bourbon to just play around with and enjoy. It certainly is going to get drunk. That's 100% sure. So as we go into what we're drinking right now, we had a caller, or not caller, we had a listener that emailed us and asked us to talk about a particular whiskey that's out. Alexis, thank you for reaching out to us and wanted us to talk specifically about Traveler Whiskey. And there's the backstory on this is, for those that don't know it, Traveler Whiskey is Chris Stapleton, the musician, wonderful country artist and musician. This is his brand, per se, under the larger Buffalo Trace / Sarzac label. And it checks in at you know, 90 proof. So it's your lower end proof wise bourbon, and you haven't tried this yet.
No.
So
this is first time.
So I think, you know, before we really talk to it and what I think about it and what he thinks about it, there's no better way to do this than what we did last week, which was the one sip challenge. I'm gonna turn you into a connoisseur one day. So take a sip, Dan, and tell us one word. I don't want to hear a monologue of bullshit. One word. What's the one word you get? Go.
You know I'm going to say it tastes like bourbon.
I don't say it tastes like bourbon. Go for it. Let's go. Give me something.
Definitely citrusy.
Okay.
I can taste the citrus.
Okay.
It's a very smooth, not so much that Kentucky hug. Very, very light if it has the Kentucky hug, I'd say.
Yeah.
Kind of like a sugar, maybe some type of sugar cane, possibly.
Okay.
It's good, smooth, very smooth.
So, what I mean, as far as a lower proof bourbon goes, or lower proof whiskey. Sorry, it's not a bourbon; it is a whiskey. What do you think? I mean, what does your gut tell you? Buy again, sip again, pass.
Let me give it another sip.
You just want an excuse to drink a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that.
This could easily be an everyday sipper.
Yeah.
I mean, if I had to guess, I don't know if you said already, because half the time when you talk, I don't really pay much attention.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. makes you feel good.
But I would say this is probably mid-90 range.
So,
I mean, something I could definitely have a couple of these and shouldn't drive home, should Uber, but I could have one or two of these and drive home easily.
Yeah, no, it is. It's 90 proof. Retail on this bottle should be around 40 bones, but because it's that Buffalo Trace branding, and we'll get into that, it tends to drive the price up a little bit. So yeah, it's a blend whiskey, and what I picked up on it, you know, very light on the nose, light color. It doesn't have a lot of depth of color, which I don't get caught up in the color. I want the substance of the bottle.
I mean, sitting next to the other two bottles you got there, it's
right down the lines.
What two bottles were sitting there?
So you have Green River sitting here, which we'll talk about later, and then the Few bottle. But if you pair it next to the Old Forester, for those that, you know, if you do this, you can definitely tell the Old Forester has a bit more color to it.
Oh, yeah. The Old Forester is definitely darker.
So, that doesn't necessarily tell a story on what bourbon's going to be better, because it comes down to the mash bill and your own palate and so on and so forth, you know, on what you particularly like. But this one, you know, this one generated a lot of buzz, right? Because people rushed to the store when it released. I mean, this was on the secondary bourbon and whiskey market. This was going quite high for a while, way more than what me personally, I would say I would pay for a bottle of this. Now, if it was at retail, been a completely different story. But after trying it and then putting it back on the shelf and then retrying it again today, you know, what I pick up on it, it's light on the nose. There's a lot of sweetness, apple to it that I pick up, that citrusy.
Okay, that's the citrusy
element.
Then.
Yeah, you know, the mouthfeel, the palate. There's some brown sugar somewhere in there. Some brown sugar. I swear, there's got to be some brown sugar. Light oak, a little bit of corn to it, almost like caramel candy. Or I would get skewered for saying this, but like candy corn.
No, nobody likes candy corn.
Man, come on.
No,
man.
Nobody
candy
likes.
Where is that?
You're one of the weirdos that will actually eat candy corn.
Candy
corn.
Let me
get another sip of this to tell you.
So, while you're sipping, the finish for me, there was a touch of spice, not a lot on the finish, which is kind of indicative for a younger.
I can't taste the spice. Usually, you know, I'm a big chicken cock fan, and that has the peppery spice to it. This does have that you can taste it, but it's not overpowering.
It's short.
It's very, very, very light. Yeah. I can pick that up.
Yeah. Not much of a hug, which I'm okay with. I mean, I'm not, again, I love a strong hug. It's a quick, short finish. So I wouldn't go out 100% and say, oh, man, this is a great, you know, I got to have this pour to start off the day. But I'm also not going to say that it doesn't hold its weight at its retail price. Not what people would pay secondary, because I don't like what happens when stuff gets inflated because of a name. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
and I think you're seeing that a lot now. You got a lot of different celebrities coming out with their own brand, not only whiskey, gin, vodka. A lot more celebrities getting into the tequila as well. You know, so like you like those small distilleries and you like those craft distilleries. So you've got a lot more coming out. But I think a lot of these celebrities are going to the higher-end guys, having them do the mash bill.
Yeah,
throwing their name on to promote it. I mean, a lot of them are coming out with great products.
Yeah, so, this is by no means is this not good. This is good whiskey. The Traveler is good whiskey, but just I think people need to understand it's a whiskey. It's a blend. It's not a bourbon. It's not a rye. It does hit a lot of notes. It is well-built. It drinks nicely, but it's not going to stand up in the same way to, for example, a 1920.
Gotcha.
As far as that boldness and that just flavor explosion, for me personally. Now, I would tell people, I will throw this out there, you know, we've talked about how I feel toward Buffalo Trace. I love their products. I don't like what's happened with their products down the road.
That's with the secondary, you know what I mean? You've got those people that are going to create that secondary market, make it to the extreme.
Yeah.
But you mentioned a couple times already on this, it's not a bourbon, it's a whiskey blend.
Right.
When you say blend, there's a lot more people trying to get into bourbon. Can you explain what do you mean by whiskey blend?
Well, in this instance, it doesn't meet the definition of a bourbon. Matter of fact, if I had to be honest, it tastes more like a Canadian whiskey.
Okay.
So it comes down to, you know, bourbon has a set, you know, standards it's got to meet. Rye is kind of the same way. You know, the mash bill comes down to how long what the mash bill is. This is a blend of a lot of different things. I don't know, and I'd have to research it and really dig into the Traveler, the guts of it, you know, what it's a blend of. But I'm going to bet money it's one of the mash bills that they use on some of their other products combined with maybe a Canadian whiskey of some type. It is good. It is good. I would, and I could be wildly off with that synopsis of the bourbon or of that whiskey, but it's enjoyable. Alexis, thank you for reaching out and asking the question. If you see it and you see it for under 60 bones, I'd say grab a bottle. I'd call it a good campfire bottle, sitting around a bonfire.
I think $60, you know, that's fair market. I'd definitely spend 60. I go as far as maybe 69.
Yeah. Oh, 69, huh?
Oh, yeah, 69.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
So, it's definitely a good drinker. You know, but it, like you said, it comes down to the endorsements and how, kind of how the celebrities are dipping their hands into the game a little bit and they're driving that up, you know?
Yeah, so, talking about game.
Game. And endorsements?
And endorsements.
We're going to get paid?
I wish. Okay. Chicken Cock, I will definitely promote your product all
God
day
loves
long.
Cock, man. God. All right. Well.
But no, just talking about game. He got game. You remember. You remember that movie. You know, WNBA draft just occurred.
Okay.
A lot of hype. You know, I'll admit, I've been one of those guys over the years that has smashed and destroyed women's sports. Not a big fan. Not going to go pay for a ticket. But honestly, over the last few years, I could say women's soccer, definitely. Mm-hmm. I would pay to go see a match or two. Now with the WNBA draft, after the NCAA, with all the hype between Reese and Clark, I mean, I think they're going to be the WNBA Magic and Bird.
You know what, though? I can almost kind of see that comparison because of the drama that was started in college and is carried over the last 2 years. I could buy off on that perhaps being the next, maybe, just maybe, it brings people to the sport. But it's still
with that said, watching these women play in college, and I'm going to throw some shade on the NBA. The NBA, there's no defense anymore.
What's defense?
What's defense? You got one or two people in the NBA that's going to actually play defense.
Yeah.
These women out there, they're balling. They're trying to make a name and show, hey, we're not just women. We can ball.
They can ball.
They can ball.
They straight ball.
And they're playing defense and offense.
Yeah, they're hustlers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now, just recently with the last 2 years, though, that whole drama between Reese and Clark. I think that's going to be exciting for the WNBA, exciting for sports fans. And even if you don't like the WNBA, if you go back and look at that game between Clark and Reese last year,
that was
some good back and forth.
So, talking about that and talking about WNBA and women's sports, and I have my thoughts on it. We'll get to my thoughts because you know me, I like stirring that pot. The draft occurred. Caitlin Clark went number one.
Yeah.
Angel Reese went seven, correct?
Number five, I believe.
Number five? Okay. So, somewhere not number one, right?
Yeah.
After her. What do you think about the disparity in the financial contracts of these players? And let me hit you with some numbers, right? Because you know some of these numbers.
I know some of the numbers. Yeah. We kind of had this discussion a little bit
so, earlier. So, four-year deal for Caitlin Clark, roughly $338,000 and some change on that over 4 years. Which breaks down to, what was it, 75 plus change the first year, 78 plus change the second year. Third year was about 85 and some change. And the fourth year, I think she goes over $97,000 in her fourth year. Right? Yeah. And then you have Reese's contract.
Which is like $16,000 less.
$324 and some change.
Yeah.
For the two, arguably, maybe not, she may be the best. I mean, she said she is. I'll say
all her records stand trophies, on. Yeah. Yeah.
But the entire draft class is talented, so we can say the top 10 is just all talented. But those two stood out. Compare that to what a rookie is getting when they come out of college or high school and they go straight to the NBA.
Well who is it? And I'm going to jack his name up. Guy from the Spurs, Wembanyama.
Yeah.
I think his rookie contract was like $32 million. And there's a lot of comparison online between the two. And you know, let's be realist. The NBA, they got the ESPN deal where ESPN paid for the rights billions of dollars. You know, also, the NBA, they're pulling in the fans, they're selling the merchandise. They can afford those high-end contracts.
Well, yeah, 100%. Uh-huh. So my question to you is, and you can ask me the same question back, should the women in the WNBA get paid more than this?
Honestly, yeah. Because, you know, at first glance, if you would have asked me this question 3-4 years ago, I was like, no, they're getting paid what they're valued. They're getting paid a good market price. Granted, they're professional athletes, but they're not bringing in those crowds. They're not selling the merchandise. But with that said, the knowledge I've gained over the years, you know, you look at it, she's making, what, 74, 75 the first year?
Yeah.
Now you're paying health insurance.
She makes less than we do.
Makes less than paying health insurance, Social Security. And when you're in the entertainment business, there's an entertainment tax.
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget about that entertainment tax. So now I completely understand why these women are going over to Europe during the off season to play in these European leagues to supplement that income.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. I will say that I had this conversation on the way to work today with my wife. We drive together, and I was surprised to see her perspective on it. You know, she was a soccer player, football for us non-Americans, and we talk about women's sports. When I watch football, soccer, women's soccer to me is awesome. Those girls are freaking badass. They are disciplined. They're fundamentally sound. It's like watching a clinic when they're on the pitch, right? Yeah. I mean, that's a fair assessment. So maybe it's because I fell in love with football, a.k.a. soccer, to this point. But when I watch the women play soccer, they're, number one, they're vicious. They're violent. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's more like blood sport with long hair and earrings than it is straight-up soccer. You know, the dude's flopping around, screaming, and they're out there headbutting and punching and pulling hair and stuff. It's kind of cool.
Well, it's so funny because there's a lot of videos online showing how, you know, the European football, it's a gentleman's game. You know, goalie goes down, they kick it out of bounds. And, you know, you got the women, they're just all out.
Shit, vicious, man.
They're vicious. Goalie's down, I don't care. I'm shooting that goal.
I mean, it's something cool to watch.
You know what I mean? Oh, you're going to push me around, you're going to catch an elbow.
Yeah. No, I agree. So, we've seen that, like, and I think a lot of people that follow European soccer or soccer in general and watch women's soccer would say the same thing, right? It's fun to watch. It's entertainment. It's technical. it's like a damn blood sport. Why isn't that translating for the basketball? Is it because of the type of sport, or is it just why does the WNBA not get that same amount of kind of like.
Like the Women's World Cup, where you got the Women's World Cup, where every match is selling out, and you know, you turn on the TV, you see a WNBA game, there's empty seats everywhere.
Yeah. So what's the reason for that? Is it sexism, or is it just they're not playing a form of basketball? Because if you watch them play, they're fundamentally sound basketball players. They could probably really put a hurting, you know, because they play all aspects of the game, right? Yeah. Why isn't it catching on? What is the difference?
I think a lot of that has to do with marketing.
Okay.
You know, you see some of these women's soccer players, they got a lot of big endorsements. They're on TV, Subway commercials, everything else. As far as the WNBA, I don't see a lot of promotions. They may have contracts with this company, that company, but they're not in the forefront to where the male basketball players or male athletes are on the forefront endorsing products.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's huge, especially, you know, you ask the majority of the general public, hey, do you know this person? Do you know this? No, they don't know because they're not following the WNBA.
No, I think that that's fair. You mentioned a certain commercial, and we're going to leave their name off the podcast. Just I don't want to get sued by some, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
But you noticed that in this certain commercial, you had Steph Curry, you had Tom Brady, you had what's the women's soccer?
Yep, I know what you're talking about.
And I kind of thought it was weird that you had Steph Curry, but you didn't have a WNBA player. But that's when it kind of dawned on me. If you go to a women's soccer match, right, whether it's Team USA or the City Leagues, because I've watched the City Leagues.
Well, that's like
the major MLS equivalent, whatever it is.
The ML, but you go overseas, you go over to Europe, the Tottenham women's team.
Man United women, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They got the women's leagues over there.
And they want to win.
And they want to win. They're competitive.
They I mean, we talked about last week, but Wrexham, AFC, part of what they do, part of their business model, and they talk about it in their episodes, if you watch it, welcome to Wrexham, they don't just want to see their men's team go up to the Premier League. They want it. Their women team completed the first undefeated season in the National League division.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and they poured money into that. They poured investment into that because they know that that's another revenue stream to bring into the overall club. So I don't know if it's just the structure, if maybe, you know, the New York Knicks were tied to the New York. I can't even tell you the WNBA.
Only ones I know is the Sparks.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm at fault for this, too, to a certain degree. But then again, I'm not a huge basketball
But then again, they haven't hyped it up. And I think when you got an athlete like Clark, an athlete like Reese, when you got that history, this is the chance for the WNBA to really play on that.
Yeah, UFC face-off, you know what I mean? Like, promote it.
But the other thing that blows my mind, with Clark, she had a chance to go to Ice Cube's Big Three League for millions.
Millions, yeah.
Barstool, Dave Poitier, whatever his name is, he was going to pay her millions to play in their rec league.
Yeah.
And then she could have stayed in college and still made more money in the NIL deals.
Off of the NIL, which is a whole other weird thing that hopefully one day soon we can actually talk about on the podcast and have somebody that understands it, because it is a mystery. But yeah, you're right. The endorsements, you know, we talk about the endorsements. You know, what part does that play? I mean, we see it in the NBA.
Yes.
We're used to it. We see it in the NFL, right? Gillette, the best a man can get. Nike, Jordans, you know what I mean? That's always been
the classic Michael Jordan, Larry Bird, McDonald, commercials.
Bo Jackson. That's a blast from the past. So, I mean, yeah, endorsements play a large part. I don't know. Maybe she's got a crazy endorsement. Maybe they all do. Maybe there's something brewing. But it just seems to me that when you look at it, minus endorsements, there's a large disparity there. And here's my beef with it. And this may rub some people the wrong way. Ladies, you know, I hear a lot of the feminist, they should get paid more. Let me ask you this. If it's entertaining to you and you like it, are you watching it?
Are you watching it?
Are you buying tickets?
Are you buying merchandise?
Because I don't particularly watch basketball. I support the sports that I do find entertaining, and to each of us our own. But I think what they're putting out is a good product, right? But and you got to support it. If you want success for them and the equal pay, and I would love to see one of these ladies make $86 million. I think it would be wonderful. Wonderful.
At that point, I'd be hating. I would be the biggest hater you ever seen.
So we'll say this episode, because if it ever happens, we'll be like, man, they shouldn't make that much. That's bullshit, right? But yeah, no, I mean, you know, listen, I'd like to see the equal pay. Is there a pay gap there? Yes. But is that driven? So the bottom line, is it driven because of society, or is it the economic part of it, the supply demand of it?
It's a little bit of both. Economics, definitely supply and demand. And again, it comes down to marketing. If you market, you know, you're doing something, you know, the Reeves-Clark matchup, you know, I can honestly say I've never watched a WNBA game, but when that matchup goes down, am I going to turn on the TV?
Yeah, I probably will.
I'm going to watch that because they're going to get down and dirty.
Yeah. No, you bring a good point. And who knows? Like I said, you know, it may come down to endorsement deals. That may have been what got her to say, no, I want to go in the WNBA. Listen, maybe she and these other just extremely talented, wonderful female athletes, maybe they're on a mission that we don't understand because we don't have to walk that walk. Maybe they are looking at it, I have got to do this to step it forward for my daughter.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, listen, I'm a father of a daughter. So I want my daughter to have all the success and all the equality that she can have, and also be able to do the things that I couldn't do. So, you know, hats off to Caitlin Clark. I don't know, who maybe we'll see her like in a Mickey D's, like...
Yeah, well, the thing with Mickey D's
you gotta be hungry, too. I'm thinking about Mickey D's.
Have you been to McDonald's lately? I don't even need to ask that.
Do I look like I've been? Yes, I've been to McDonald's. No, actually, you know what? I haven't. I kind of sworn off fast food for a couple of reasons. But, well, it doesn't look it, but it I mean...
But no.
Yeah.
The thing that blows my mind, I mean, McDonald's, you remember back in the 80s, even 90s.
Oh, the Star Wars cups?
They had so many good promotions. So cool. Like as a kid, you were begging your parents to go because you wanted the newest toy, the newest cup. But also, like, when you were younger, like your kid's age, my own Oliver's age.
Right.
You know, they had the playground set up with the slides.
Oh, yeah.
The spinny things. They had the hamburger.
The coli pit.
Yeah, that purple thing, you know.
Yeah.
Now you go into McDonald's, it's depressing. There's no kid zone.
No,
it's
man.
All gray.
It looks like you could have a rave in some of them. Like it's just very bland.
It almost looks like a mental patient ward. Just completely neutral colors. Completely, you look around and people just look so unhappy.
Well, you need a mental patient ward when you see the prices of your total when you ring up a fry and a friggin' Big Mac.
Oh, 100%.
Come on. How much? Listen, so we went the other day. Remember, we had the kids' soccer game. We blew out of that bastard really quick to go get some grub because we were hungry
as hell.
Yeah. And what was it? We had four English McMuffins and couple hash browns, and I think you got a Diet Sprite or something like that, because your shit's weak.
Yeah.
And it was what? It was like $32?
$32, yeah.
I'm like, man, $32? I mean, listen, so if that's over 40, yeah, I mean, literally I'm halfway to a bottle of bourbon, I get more joy with that bottle of bourbon than I'm going to get from that sausage, egg, and cheese McMuffin that's going to have me on the can later in some serious pain. So I don't know, man, what's happened to fast food? What the hell has happened to fast food?
Oh, well, it's that economics in general. All these big monopolies, you know, they could go ahead and pay those $19, $20 an hour salaries where you got the mom and pop stores. You're pushing them out of business where you can't afford that. But I think the thing that kills me, it's just the childhood memories of, like, the bright colors.
Yeah.
The kids' equipment, the slides and everything like that. The best was they had a Hamburglar that, like, spun in circles. This is one of my favorite stories, and my brother is going to kill me, and he's going to call me every name under the book. But, you know, as children, you were reckless. You didn't care. So we were spinning that thing around, like, trying to go back to the future, like we were Michael J. Fox, just spinning it as fast as we can.
We're back to Michael J. Fox after last week?
Yeah. All right. But anyways, I'm spinning this thing. My brother's on it, and I'm trying to spin it so he throws up. You know, as big brother, you're going to pick on your little brother. And I'm spinning this thing around fast as shit. And my brother decides it's too fast, and it's going way too fast. And it ain't going to slow down, and it ain't going to stop. My brother tries to jump off this thing at full speed, and the momentum catches him, throws him like halfway across McDonald's. He busts his head open on a table. And I think that's the reason they got rid of a lot of the kids zone, because, you know, kids are reckless. We don't care. We're invincible. And a lot of people now turn it into an opportunity to sue
a restaurant.
Because I remember a few years later, we went back, and that same ride, it was now cemented in to where you couldn't spin it around at all.
Yeah.
So I see the legal aspect, and I see the insurance issues with that. But come on, take a risk. Have some fun. Bring the bright colors. Stop being so depressing.
So I have a recent memory with the play zone. So, you know, my last duty station before I retired was Andrews Air Force Base in D.C. I was not happy to be in D.C., but we ended up down in Southern Maryland, Waldorf area, Brandywine area, for those of you from around that area. And one of the things that I do remember, my wife Jennifer, wonderful whiskey lady that she is, she would meet one of her girlfriends who had the same age kids at Chick-fil-A. They had a play zone, and they get all the kids together, man, and they would just wow out in that place until these kids were just exhausted. I mean, just straight up ready to.
I guarantee my mom loved taking us to McDonald's and Burger King when they had all that, because we'd wear ourselves out by the time we ate, went home, showered. Yeah. We were out like a light. There's no fighting going to bed.
Now you got to take the kids up to the soccer field and just tell them that doing laps will make them professional athletes, and watch them run themselves to death just to get them tired. You know, I can't take them. I can't enjoy a burger while I'm there. But yeah, man, it's tough. I mean, the whole fast food industry has just kind of changed. It's not like it was. I mean, it's funny though, because now you said that brings back all these memories, like the Darth Vader. Remember the Star Wars cups and the. Remember the Monopoly? The Monopoly game pieces?
Game pieces? The
Fred Flintstone cups.
So it's so funny. When I came back from the military, I was living with my parents. And my dad still gives me shit about this.
Had a Fred Flintstone cup?
No.
Yeah, you did. No. Don't lie.
So the Fred Flintstone cups are perfect for milk and Oreos. Like, they are. Absolutely, like, perfectly
the
wide.
Good dip ratio.
Too much milk, right?
Yeah. That's important. The dip ratio on an Oreo is, you got to have that room.
Like, it's definitely great. So every night when I first came back from the military, I like my three Oreos of milk. And my dad.
You're a damn lie, three Oreos. You're a goddamn lie.
But my dad would give me shit every night. Like, are you a child? What the hell are you doing drinking out of a Fred Flintstone? But it was perfect. And then, you know, once I got my own place, moved out from my parents, once I got out of the military, one of the things my mom gifted me, and I absolutely love it, are those Flintstone cups.
How many did you have?
Well, I got two of them.
Your brother got.
I don't know how many we actually had, but my mom gave me two, and still to this day, every night, you know, three Oreos, milk, and my Fred Flintstone.
A shocker. Okay, so as we wrap this up, let me ask you this though. This is important. So you're an Oreo dunker.
Yes.
Do you drink the milk after you?
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Even with you being lactose intolerant.
I am not lactose intolerant.
I go a lot. Like, I'd throw one in there, let it sit, let it marinate a little bit, fall apart.
See, I don't like them too soft. They got to be that perfect ratio milk to cookie.
All right. I could go a bunch of different ways.
I know you can. I see your face. That's why I said milk to cookie ratio.
Milk to cookie ratio? All right. Hey, listen, I'm buying. So, listen. One of the things we want to do before we wrap up is when we do our midweek episodes, guys and gals, we want to bring you the whiskey of the week. And this isn't anything big. This is just my recommendation on one that I want to kind of give you guys If you haven't had it, to go give it a try.
Oh, I'll tell them right off the bat what it is. I didn't know we were going to do this. Since we're going to do this,
we're going to do it. It's off the cuff, man.
It's off the cuff.
We roll.
We're going to go with chicken cock.
Oh, Jesus. Here we go with the cock again. So for Dan, chicken cock, as you can tell, is a huge deal in his life. He does not like missing out on a chance to...
The chicken cock rye, amazing. The straight whiskey, phenomenal. I'm going to push chicken cock, and hopefully they eventually decide to pay me. I will walk around with a chicken cock shirt, chicken cock hat, all day long. I will dress like a chicken with a chicken cock shirt. Just pay me.
Listen, so chicken cock, if you do tune into us by some miracle, because, you know, we're so big, right? No, but if you do, and I will pay you guys to make him dress up. And I have some ideas, and we can talk. I think it'll be just fantastic. So for Dan, it's chicken cock for your whiskey of the week. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So mine this week, in all seriousness, guys, I'm going to go with Green River Wheated Bourbon. So
wait, I was serious about the chicken cock.
I know you were.
All right, I'll let you get back to yours.
But this one, Green River Wheated Bourbon, is something that should be fairly easy to find. You can order it online. The prices have not exploded on this. This bottle drifts around the $30 to $40 mark, depending on which state you're in. You can also find it on a couple of the more reputable websites that will ship to your
that's
your
it.
State.
$30 to $40?
$34. If you live in Ohio, man, you can find it on the shelf all the time. And they make two. They make a wheated bourbon, and they make a straight bourbon. And they're both delicious. The wheated one, though, is a little bit sweeter to me. I like it. This is actually, a parent company to them is Bardstown Bourbon Company, which, you know, I love Bardstown Bourbon Company.
Yeah.
They make fantastic stuff. Green River is, I'm afraid that in a few years, once people really start opening their minds a little bit and trying this, they're going to realize that this, hands down, rivals Blanton. Fight me if you think I'm wrong, because I guarantee you, if I blind you with this and other weeded bourbons, you are probably going to choose this, and I've done it. I've done this a piece.
Is this what we had on Saturday before the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, this is what we had. So, like I said, there's a couple of iterations of what Green River puts out. They make a hell of a good lineup. Their single barrel is amazing. That's a little bit more difficult to find because it is a single barrel and it is a little bit more expensive, but it's priced for what it is. It's fantastic. The Green River Wheated Bourbon, guys, pick it up. Give it a shot. Checks in at a 90 proof, so it's an easy, easy sipper. And it is just, it's a great way to either start off your night of whiskey drinking or finish the night of whiskey drinking, depending on what you're going to do. So highly recommend it. And we will start to do this every midweek episode that we do. We'll throw out, we're going to make those a bit more whiskey heavy for those that really enjoy that kind of content. As always, thank you for tuning in to this podcast. We do ask for your feedback. We'd love for you to hit us up with more questions. Again, we got a couple in this week, and we're going to cover them as we go along. Can't thank you enough for the support and love. Please like us and follow us. And as always, until the next episode, stay thirsty, my friends.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast of Bullets and Bourbon. Remember to like, comment, and subscribe, so you never miss an episode.